Start with your values and then figure out who am I going to invite into this company to join me to build it based off of these values. And that's how you can connect the culture to the interview process.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. I'm your host, Jason Mark Campbell. I'm so excited to bring forward to you a guest who is an author, a business owner, someone that also puts into practice the things he preaches around putting people first, building an incredible workplace culture, and understanding the power that sales has in bringing success in your venture. This man has been a solopreneur, management consultant for companies such as JP Morgan Chase, Verizon, Subway, McDonald's Canada, Lexus, and dozens of others, and currently owns a multiple location restaurant branch called Brasa Peruvian Kitchen that are based in Toronto and in New York City. As the founder and CEO, has created massive success within this organization, even getting it started in the middle of the pandemic and having explosive growth in the process. The man is the author of the best-selling book, People First Culture, Building a Lasting Business by Shifting Your Focus from Profits to People. And he's someone that's been putting this into practice and showing the success as well. His book has been featured in publications such as Time Magazine, Business Insider, Forbes, and DigiDay. Currently is living in between New York and Toronto, where the locations of his restaurant is. Michel Falcon is with me. Michel, welcome.
Thank you very much, Jason. A pleasure to be speaking with you.
Well, we actually realized that we have a mutual connection at the beginning of your journey. Also, a man has been featured on this podcast, Cameron Harold, and you had your start within a call center, and I can't imagine something that's more of the, you know, sales stereotype than having to work within a call center. And so I'd love to start with, what was your experience starting there, and what was your attitude around what sales was when you were there?
Well, speaking of Cameron and the call center and 1-800-GOT-JUNK, one of Cameron's first lessons to me was make price secondary in the eyes of the customer. I can't tell you where he heard that, if that was his, you know, phrase or not, but what better way to increase value with the customer where they almost think like, I don't even care what the price is, because the experience is so good and consistent, right? We talk about wow customer experiences. Personally, Jason, as a consumer of things, I don't need wow. I want consistency, because that consistency leads to predictability. And I know that I can go into that grocery store, that restaurant, that insurance brokerage, and blink and the process is done. And I pay for that convenience and that predictability. 1-800-GOT-JUNK was my real world MBA. I left business school because I don't say this proudly, Jason, but I'm not an academic. I don't do well in the four walls of academia. So I left business school to see if there was other opportunities to learn, to become an entrepreneur, to become, you know, a leader within, you know, entrepreneurship and build companies. At the time, not many people know this, but 1-800-GOT-JUNK is based in Vancouver, and so is Lululemon's head office. And when I left my business school, I went to go see what company might hire me where I can contribute to their success and then get paid to learn. I interviewed with 1-800-GOT-JUNK and Lululemon. I got offers from both being call center roles. And I chose 1-800-GOT-JUNK because that year they had just come off winning the best workplace in Canada. And I felt like that culture would be able to give me that real world MBA. And guess what? It did. And I got paid to learn so much that I'm applying today. Cameron, Brian Scudamore, and many people at that company really molded me. And, you know, 23-year-old Michel Falcon wasn't as put together as 38-year-old Michel Falcon. So these people had their work cut out for them in terms of being my mentor. Patrick Lewis, huge, huge. If anybody has a son, daughter, niece, nephew that's looking to learn company culture and growing businesses, 1-800-GOT-JUNK and companies like that, get them there. Biggest recommendation I could share.
Well, I love that you had your book come out, I believe it was around 2018, around workplace culture, its benefits. And, you know, you're looking back at when these 1-800-GOT-JUNKs and we're looking at emphasizing culture, but it wasn't that much of a buzzword back then. And I'd be curious to know, like, what have you noticed in the management space that has brought culture to the forefront? And are you seeing like instances where maybe it's not being done exactly the way it was intended?
Yeah, great question. 2018 is when I wrote my book. I released it on my birthday, October 16th, as a gift to myself. I was first introduced to company culture in 2007 when I joined 1-800-GOT-JUNK. 1-800-GOT-JUNK and companies in that era, Zappos.com as well, really much pioneered company culture as a growth model. It's not just platitudes on the wall and things like this, like they're growth strategies. And what I'm seeing is that there is an over-index in an investment in digital marketing, let's say, or PR, traditional brand awareness growth strategies, which I would never say would not be relevant to companies. There's always going to be room for that expenditure to grow your business through traditional media and such. What I'm seeing with company culture is that people just don't know what to do next. Like, how many company culture experts or workplace experts are there in comparison to digital marketers, let's say? Maybe 10 to 1, 20 to 1. So I'm seeing that people believe in it. There's enough case studies to show that companies use this as a growth model, but there's just a lack of abundance of people that know how to do it. And the only reason I'm able to do this is because of my time working within a company that was culture centric. And I got that front row seat to see how it was done. And from 2007 to 2012, when I was working at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, just a sponge. I knew one day I would use these strategies, put my own spin on it, and bring it into a company of my own. And today that is now Brass Improving Kitchen. And we are in a very competitive labor market, one where turnover is rampant. So to contextualize it for you, Jason, the typical fast casual restaurant, which I operate within, and for those not too familiar, fast casual restaurants are your Chipotles, no table service, you're in and out in about 5-6 minutes, versus full service restaurant, that's where you're being served for 2 hours. Fast casual restaurants are known to have 100% year over year turnover. Last year, Brass Improving Kitchen, we only had 17% year over year turnover. And I draw very thick, solid lines to that achievement because of our investment of company culture. And the other day, somebody asked me a question, like, how do you know if somebody's truly committed to their company culture as an organization? And it's not just platitudes or things that they pound their chest about. And I said, show me your P&L. Show me your P&L. And where you allocate your resources, finances, and I'll tell you what matters to you the most. And if it goes toward marketing or things outside of company culture, that's fine. Nobody's going to criticize that. But it rids yourself of saying that I don't have the time or the budget for company culture investment. You do. You're just choosing to spend it somewhere else, which is fine. But I don't believe you can say that you don't have the budget.
I think there's an assumption when it comes to company culture that that's at a point where you have an HR department, you're a large organization, and you decide, oh, I'm going to now have culture be crafted in this lab environment, in this corporate structure. But in your case, obviously, this is something you've noticed. It can be injected right from the beginning of the organization and without having a dedicated HR department. So I'd love to explore that myth and what is the reality of how it can be applied.
Right. So you build a house, you start with the foundation first. You're not designing the pool. Right? You start with the foundation. That's what company culture is. It is the foundation and bedrock of an organization of shared values, mission, and vision, right? We know these things. We know every business school is going to teach you about mission, vision, statements, core values, right? Some companies will go and deco that on their wall and really championing that. But that's just like one step of many that one has to do to be able to make it a reality. Now, if you're from Toronto and you're familiar with a beach called Sugar Beach, it's downtown Toronto. And it was two blocks away from my home when I was there full time. And in ideating what Brasa Peruvian Kitchen would be, and I say ideating because I couldn't action anything. I started it during the pandemic and Toronto had many lockdowns. So I had some idle time to think about what is this company going to look and behave like. It took me nearly 1 year to develop the mission, the vision, and the values of the company. Not because I can't string some words together. It's because I had some time on my hand and I would jot some things down one day in a notebook when I was sitting at Sugar Beach. I would put it away and I would come back, look at it again. So I was forming this foundation of the company that one day would be my organization. Company culture is not reserved for $100 million companies and above. Company culture can be something that small businesses action because there are many cost-friendly opportunities to be able to leverage company culture strategies to build the foundation that I speak of. For example, one of our core values is experience-driven as a company. So we want everybody that interacts with Brasa Peruvian Kitchen to have a phenomenal experience. Jason, the customer, Jason, the supplier, Jason, the insurance professional that facilitates our insurance, and anybody that you interact with, the delivery driver. So if we want everybody to be cut from the same cloth, what you can do is take interview questions based off of your core values. So if experience driven is a core value, Jason, if you interview with us at Brasa Peruvian Kitchen, I'm going to ask you a question. What is the most memorable customer experience that you've ever received as a customer? Tell me about that. Now, if Jason leans in and really describes a phenomenal experience that he had with a mom and pop coffee shop, I'm going to probe it. Like, how did that make you feel? Did you tell people about it? How did you describe that? That likely means Jason has customer centricity in his DNA. He knows how to give that experience. But if Jason says, you know what? I can't think of anything. Well, I wonder, how on earth are you going to deliver a great experience if you don't even know what that looks like as the end customer? We might not make an offer to somebody like that. So if you're thinking of your organization, whether it's a sales team within a company, whether it's your own organization, regardless of industry, start with your values and then figure out who am I going to invite into this company to join me to build it based off of these values. And that's how you can connect the culture to the interview process. What does that cost us? A little bit of time, a little bit of invention? Because it costs us a lot in hard dollars.
Right when you were sharing that interview question, I already had my own customer-centric experience that I've actually taken the time to do a solo episode to speak of someone's coffee shop in Ottawa on how they dedicated to experience. And like, already that shows where you can have that sense of commonality around what you value and what is important. And that's such an easy thing. This is not about hiring a culture person. This is a quick thing that you can actually look that already is applicable now that can save you on the interview question. Now, I'd be curious to know, when it comes to picking customer, if we're looking at a sales context, have you noticed how this actually helps in terms of conversion, or if it starts influencing the way that you market or look for leads when you actually have a focus on culture?
Yeah, you want the world to know how you behave as an organization, not just employees, right? You want to be able to appeal to people who may buy from you that also may say, wow, I like that company. I want to buy from them. I want to support them. It's not dissimilar to, you know, how Nike positions themselves, right? I don't play basketball well, but if I put on a pair of LeBron James basketball shoes, I feel like I play a little bit better because I kind of associate and align with that brand and what they stand for. And that can translate, being able to communicate your company culture is phenomenal. So, and can provide phenomenal results on the sales side of things and customer acquisition and increasing conversion. I'll give you an example. Let me contextualize it. So if you go to a brass approving kitchen, this is live in New York. I thought of this 2 days ago ahead of this podcast. So it's going to be coming to Toronto as well. But as Jason approaches our team to order his meal, there's the sneeze guard that is typical in fast casual restaurants. He'll be greeted. The word serve you. I don't give people scripts, no sales scripts, no service scripts. I give them some guidelines. So the word serve you must be presented to Jason. How may I serve you? In any way, welcome. What may I serve you today? Something like this. Okay? But what Jason's going to notice is that there's a 4-inch by 4-inch decal or sticker on the sneeze guard. And it says, and I will go verbatim because I wrote it just the other day. It says, we are a no tipping environment. It is not your responsibility to pay a living wage. It's ours. The team members serving you today earn 21% higher than comparable restaurants. Thank you for choosing us. And I turned to my director of operations and I said, I want to do this. What do you think? He said, let's do it. Because when people read that sticker, and I'm not kidding you, Jason, they see it. And you see their eyes get big. And you see them Instagramming it. You see their eyes get big. So when Jason, when you lift your head up and I say, Jason, welcome to Peru. Welcome to Brasa. How may I serve you? I'll have the hot breast and chicken bowl. Jason, would you like double protein on that? Jason, would you like a superfood smoothie? Oh, I like this company. Yeah, give it to me. That is how I'm able to increase your average guest check in a way that is trusting because I built rapport with you. How you market your company culture is the acquisition tool. How you create a community of people that want to be a part of the next product launch, liking your Instagram posts and engaging there. That is the rub. That's what's missing. That's where the rubber meets the road. But it goes back to like, where do we learn these things? I only know any of this because of 2007 and 2012 at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That was the bedrock for me. That got kind of the flywheel turning. And here we are today in restaurants. A junk removal specialist turned restaurateur. Who would have thought that?
We're seeing the evidence that, you know, investing in culture improves profits, even though you're not focusing on it, reduces turnover, keeps the retention. And there's a lot of highly educated people that are studying business, but aren't actually seeming to do the opposite in today's world. Like they're not investing in culture. They're not seeing it as a priority when we see that's a foundation for a lot of amazing growth and opportunity. So why does it seem like the world's going in the opposite direction?
Well, I'll circle back to what I said earlier and just like, I don't know what to do next. And when you've always had the answers, it's hard to make yourself vulnerable like that. Because as leaders, sometimes you're expected to know everything, which couldn't be the furthest thing from the truth. Cameron Harold was my mentor, amongst others. Now, if you look at, if there's a changing of the guard in leadership in companies, where's the progressive thinking going to be coming from? Is it from the next wave of leaders who have been raised in these company cultures like I have? I think that's what I'm starting to see, is that the more youthful demographic of professionals are able to actually mentor the generation that came before them to be able to say, this is what we want from our workplaces. This is what we want to stand behind when we work with companies and do business with them. And that's just the study of consumer behavior. Like, we know this to be true, that it's always evolving. But what about the workplace behavior? That has to be studied. But it really comes down to two things, the education and the progressive thinking to be able to do things differently and create workplaces that have never been seen before, so that there's positive output, better sales, more profit, greater brand admiration.
For someone who's just getting started, maybe you're building a business and it doesn't matter the industry, and you already spoke about how you took that year to really get clear on what you were trying to create. Do you find that there's some easy things that people can actually pay attention to and get right as far as understanding who they want to attract and maybe even who they want to repel when it comes to building that culture?
Absolutely. One, go peer outside of your industry. Look at companies that you admire as a consumer or as a professional. For example, one company that I admire is Warby Parker. They don't sell salad bowls like me. They sell eyewear. I like the foundation of their culture. I like how their CEO presents themselves. I don't know them personally, but I like what I see. I like the retail experience. So go pick five companies that you revere and study them intently. Read their books if their CEOs or founders are in books before, listen to them on podcasts, read that white paper. Then go look at how was their company built? What's their mission? What's their vision? What are their core values? I do not recommend ripping off and duplicating somebody else's core values because you wouldn't do that for yourself as a human. Why would you do that for your organization? If you do that, not going to be very authentic, would it? Start there by looking. Who's doing what? How did they do it? Because on podcasts like this, the founders are sharing everything you need to know. And at the very least, use that as inspiration. Number two, sit alone with your thoughts and recognize that this is my team. I'm the leader of this team. This is my company. How do I want to grow this for the next 10 years? Don't focus on the first 10 weeks. You want to build something that's legendary, that's going to have a legacy. Really sit clearly with your thoughts for a while. Put away your thoughts, come back to them as well. That's why it took me a year. Went back and forth, writing notes. No, I don't care about this as much as I thought I did. Oh, I really care about this one. This one's still resonating weeks and months after. That's going to be a value from ours. One of them is team member obsessed. That's one of our core values. Then when it comes to the individuals that join your company, do something that I call the team member muse. Start writing down keywords of individuals you want to work with. What type of behaviors have you enjoyed in people in the past? What type of behaviors did you not like? Split the column at the page in two and be able to write down what you enjoyed and what you don't enjoy. When it comes to the repelling part, ask interview questions that are immediately going to show what this person is like, and that will tell you right away. I'll give you one tactic. Our job description, which I have called a career description. I've banned the word job description in our company because I Googled the definition of job, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like compensation for ordinary work. And I read that. It's like ordinary work. So the word job is not said within Breast Proving Kitchen. Our career description, career's uplifting, right? At the beginning is 6 pages. It's also got 30 minutes of videos embedded within links. Then you have to click to apply. That's another 15 questions. And what we're doing here is we want to test endurance. How many people just say, I'm not doing this work? Well, thank you. You've shown us that you're not willing to put in the work. You may be great somewhere else, it's not here. But for those individuals, Jason, that watch the videos, fill out the application. One of the questions in the application is, did you watch the 4 videos, yes or no? Some people that say no, they won't get an interview. But then you see these answers, very robust, enthusiastic answers. I'm interested in this individual. They've put forth the effort when nothing was guaranteed for them. Then what do you think the first question is, Jason, when they show up to the virtual interview? Tell me about the videos. What did you like? What attracted you? And I know where I'm being lied to. But when Jason, the candidate, says, Jason, and I had this happen not too long ago. You look at the individual looking down. They're looking at their notes. One person said, Michelle, in video number two, and this is a timestamp, at 4 minutes and 27 seconds, you started saying this. You're telling me I'm not going to hire this person? If you get through our culture recruitment process, it's almost a formality. If you show up on time for the interview and are who we think you are, you've got the job because we've already interviewed you that entire time. You didn't even know it. And that makes sense for our culture because one of our core values is also performance and responsibility. These individuals that fill out these great applications, they're performing. They're responsible by showing up on time. So do you see how I have front-loaded the culture, the values and everything on a tactical level to be able to understand, show me who you are, even when you don't think we're observing.
Damn, Michelle, I'm taking notes for this one for sure. And what I want to do is just encourage, if this is resonating with you and you have a business that you're wanting to grow, maybe you've thought about starting it, you've already started it, but regardless, I would highly encourage you pick up a copy of People First Culture. We'll put a link into the show notes, Building a Lasting Business by Shifting Your Focus from Profits to People. This is actually a kind of read that's right on my radar right now. This has been something I've been wanting to learn more about, so I'm definitely getting a copy myself, and I'm looking forward to dive deeper into your work. I like the ideas that you're bringing forward. It seems completely aligned with what we talk about here on the Selling with Love podcast, which I know we didn't speak as much about sales, but we have touched about the fact that you said make people feel like the cost or what you need to pay as a price is secondary. And I'd love to kind of elaborate on that because I thought it was a powerful statement and I wanted to kind of unpack that so that people can have an understanding. Well, if the price is only going to be second, what am I focusing so much to make first if that's not clear to me?
Your value propositions, like what are your value propositions for us? It's clean restaurant served by habitually friend people with consistently flavorful food. Those are, for us, the ultimate review, Jason, is called the 3P review. People, product, property. So if Jason, the guest of Rest Improving Kitchen, writes a Google review and happens to mention the people are so friendly, the food is so flavorful, and their restaurants are so clean, Michelle Falcon is one happy person, and we earned our first one in New York just yesterday on day two. Now, that is our unique value propositions, regardless of whether you sell hats, skateboards, or Peruvian-inspired food. Know what those things are and market them exceptionally, but also behave within those daily. You have to be authentic with who and what you are. What do you serve the market? And the market will thank you. The market will continue to buy and you'll grow organically. Organic growth is the best growth you can have. It's the most profitable growth. It's Jason coming back 4 times a month instead of 2 times a month because he loves our unique value propositions. It's Jason spreading positive word of mouth in the real world or in the digital world. And then your friends and family, Jason, are going to come to Brasa, and we didn't pay Facebook $1,000 to acquire a customer or whatever the cost of customer acquisition might be, right? Just true organic business. Like, I want to grow Brasa like my grandfather would have grown his business in the 80s. No internet, no pay-per-click, just great service served with hospitality and products that work. You can't over-market something that doesn't work, that doesn't feed the market what it wants. And that's what I have found selling junk removal services and nicely marinated chicken.
I love that. Michelle, there's a word that came up at the beginning and you've recently said it again. And I think it's one that I've not spent much time emphasizing on this podcast with many guests. And I feel like you're the perfect person to kind of unpack it. But you spoke about the value of consistency being key to more consistent sales, or at least getting more sales, getting happier people. Where do you see consistency being such a powerful differentiating factor in today's market particularly?
Well, it gives peace of mind to a customer that has more options than ever before. Like, customers have optionality. Very few monopolies nowadays. very few oligopolies even. Why I love consistency is because it takes the guesswork out of the buying decision for the customer, especially for customers that don't like change. They don't want to spend time finding another vendor to sell them insurance or whatever you may be selling. So the consistency leads to peace of mind. The peace of mind part leads to trust with the brand. And that outcome is more organic growth. Renewing those contracts, buying another salad once per month, and it makes the product more sticky, because when you leave something that you like for another option because maybe the price is cheaper, you often purchase a headache. What I mean by that is every time I try a different option, because maybe there's 15% cheaper for this or that, I lose that peace of mind because I don't know who I'm getting in business with. And often the cheaper price is going to buy you a headache. Our products are not the most expensive in the market, but we're premium priced and we stand proudly behind our pricing because we know we support it with our three unique value propositions, and that is value. And I don't want to undermine my product and the service and the efforts of the team. We stand proudly to it. People will say, oh, your Chipotle's cheaper than you. They are, and they're a great meal. This is what we do. Now, I'll never discount frequently unless you're on my email list, perhaps.
Michelle, I am so mad that there's no such restaurant available here in Southeast Asia. And now I'm looking very excited to my next visit to New York or Toronto, because I'll definitely be stopping at your restaurant. And I'm looking forward to going through your book as well. There's a question that I ask every guest that comes on the show, I have to ask you as well, which is, you're on the Selling with Love podcast. What does selling with love mean to you?
Doing something that you love doing every day. Recognizing that the financial outcome is a reward. And that there has to be a foundation and the true reason why you're doing it. The cherry on top is the monetary piece of it.
Michelle, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I love all of the ideas that you shared today. All the things that we can apply from just listening to this short conversation is immense. And once again, I want to remind everybody to go and have a look at People First Culture, Building a Lasting Business by Shifting Your Focus from Profits to People. We're going to have a link in the show notes for you to grab a copy of that book. And of course, if you are in New York, you know where to go, the Brasa Peruvian Kitchen. I am hungry. I am jealous because I would love to have some right now. But honestly, Michelle, I'm happy that you're a leader that's bringing these values forward. I think in a world today, we are starved to see leaders take bold courage and to do the right thing and to become another case study of what success looks like when you do such a thing, so we can inspire larger organizations as well to embrace taking care of people, creating a great product, and actually shifting our focus away from just trying to market and sell without caring about the outcome, but really building a culture that's just helping the owners, helping the stakeholders. Everybody wins when you do this, and I'm glad that you're a leader in that field. So thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.